Welcome to Gluck Radio. I am Dr. Errol Gluck, executive life coach and master problem solver. In the age of snapping countless number of selfies everywhere we go, it seems, on the other side, wherever we turn, we're also being told to love ourselves at face value. However, the rising rate of plastic surgery, depression, eating disorders, suicide, and low self-esteem states otherwise. Here today with us is Annalee Rufus, a survivor of low self-esteem, self-hate, and self-loathing. She is the author of Party of One, A Loner's Manifesto, Stuck, Why We Can't or Won't Move On, and her newest release, Unworthy, How to Stop Hating Yourself, is now out in paperback. Hope we're all excited to be here today as we dwell into the depths, the deep psychological struggles that undermined millions and millions and billions of men and women all over the world. Exactly what personal, societal, and biological factors spark low self-esteem in individuals, and how much responsibility and blame can we place on our parents? Or are we to blame? We look at the most common personality test and pitfalls of low self-esteem, as well as the positive aspects of it and what we could do to bring closure to the battles we face within ourselves. Annalee, we warmly welcome you. You have an amazing book, and you start your first chapter saying that people are not born with self-esteem, meaning that it's not genetic. What do you mean by that?
Self-esteem as a kind of sense of self and a judgment of the self is a luxury that we get, as you know, at about age 3, because infants are born basically bent on survival. They aren't thinking about themselves. They don't get self-awareness. According to developmental psychologists, human beings do not develop self-awareness until about age 3. They start looking in mirrors and, you know, who am I, and kind of linking together their different experiences. But as infants, you know, we're almost like, you know, just blank space trying to get food and warmth and survival.
But Annalee, let me ask you this question. Parents who, let's say the mother has a self-loathing, she obviously is going to bring that into her emotions during the pregnancy. Do you feel that there's a connection, just the way there's a connection with alcoholism and different diseases?
It's very, very interesting, because brain science is still comparatively new, and they've studied the MRIs, the brain concentrations, white matter, gray matter, of identical twins who were raised apart as strangers, far, far away from each other, and they'd bring these twins back together and find that they have extremely, extremely similar habits. They have the same taste in partners. They have the same eating habits, okay, and they also have identical brain concentrations because they have identical DNA. This tells scientists that maybe we are born with certain likelihoods. Of course, they know that we're born with certain tendencies to get certain diseases, vulnerabilities, so we might be born with the vulnerabilities, self-criticism, perfectionism, the things that would make us more likely to have low self-esteem. As for in the womb, again, we don't know yet, and it's so fascinating, because how much of our images of ourselves, are how hard we are on ourselves or how much we love ourselves, is based on literally what our mothers were thinking when they carried us around. We do not know yet. I want to know, but we don't.
Yeah, I actually think that it does really matter. I think that their attitude, just like their diet, does affect us. But let me ask, you know, for our audience, explain what self-esteem is.
Interestingly, self-esteem was not even a term until about the mid-20th century, when a psychologist introduced it as a way of saying, how does each human being, individual, view themselves? And this is built on, you know, do I punish myself or reward myself? Can I sit quietly with myself, or do I get anxious and have to connect with others? You know, all kinds of questions were built into this. our ancestors did not have the luxury of even thinking about self-esteem because they were like...
They were fighting for survival.
Yeah, they were, you know, they were trying to raise their kids past age two without dying of diphtheria. They were trying to...
Correct. You know, but you know what? I still think that in the human psyche, or just like in animals, there's a pecking order, that self-esteem is the way one perceives oneself, you know, in a particular environment, the value that one has. But I want to jump into something because, again, fascinating book. You hated yourself for 40 years, which is half of most people's lifetime. Why? What was the trigger? And what does it mean by hating yourself?
What hating yourself feels like is walking around every day, dragging a ball and chain from your ankle while hitting yourself in the head with a baseball bat, and you refuse to stop because you think, you believe that is what you deserve. Interesting. I interviewed a lot of people when I was researching Unworthy, and everyone has a different story, of course. You know, everyone with low self-esteem has a different reason. Some people were horribly abused, you know, at home or at school. Some people were bullied. Some people had bad relationships. Some people were sort of excluded. They experienced homophobia or racism at an early age. Okay, in my case, my mother had extremely low self-esteem. That just, she was in terrible pain her entire life. Not physical pain, but she was bullied as a child because she was overweight. Now, these days, kids are told, you know, don't be bullies. Don't be mean to people who are different. Don't be mean to other kids. Well, yeah, people still are bullies today. But in her day, nobody was telling kids not to be bullies, and they were. So, I have to cough. So, what some children said on some playground in New York City in 1938, you know, look at the fatso, she never, ever got over that. So that, you know, 20 years later, when I was a toddler watching her, and she was, you know, an attractive, statuesque, intelligent, well-educated human being, I watched her look in the mirror saying to her reflection, you freaking ugly pig. Now, I saw that. I saw that every day at a very young age. I didn't have any other experience. I thought, well, this is what ladies do. This is how grown-ups feel about themselves. And, yeah, I did that. That's what I grew up doing, too. She did not mean any harm. She loved me. She didn't want me to have low self-esteem.
Right. And obviously she didn't know the connection. And she was just... That's the way she felt. You know, she was using in...
They absorb everything they see, and she didn't know that or think about that. You know, she just thought, this is, you know, I'm having my own experience looking in the mirror. You know, you don't understand. And I tell this to people that I know who are raising kids. It's like, you, however you feel about yourself, your child will see it if you feel as badly about yourself as my mother felt about herself, do not reveal it.
So
do not.
I completely agree. We don't tell our kids our problems. We solve their problems. Okay, so meaning many parents try to make their children their parent. Not a good idea. Tell me about your healing journey. How did you begin to heal yourself? And do you consider yourself healed from low self-esteem?
Well, it's a long path. You know, I do think healing is possible. And as I say in the book, you know, I have a whole chapter called Healing Takes Time because, you know, low self-esteem is so ingrained and it's so deep within us. And it's a core belief. You know, we think we are flawed, horribly flawed. That belief alone is, A, completely self-destructive, and some people do not survive it. But, B, it's very isolating because we think we're so bad that we're unpresentable. You know, we're living in a kind of frozen hiding paralysis where, yeah, we're presenting a face to the world, but it doesn't feel like a real face because we're so ashamed of what we think is our real face. So that just to get even to the beginning of admitting, you know what, my problem isn't the stuff that I think it is. You know, my problem isn't that I, you know, am ugly and don't know how to dress and don't know how to be in society and I'm stupid and I'm a failure. That's not my problem. My problem is that I believe those things about myself because they were told to me by some authority figure somewhere way back there. So that, you know, the beginning is to realize I was told some lies. I came to believe some lies about myself by someone who had power over me. It wasn't even my issue to start with. You know, it's like some liar told me a lie and I believed it. That is the first thing we need to learn. Even that takes a while to learn. And then from there, yeah, okay, start learning, recognizing the habits that you have. In the book, I talk about a lot of kind of dead giveaways, low self-esteem habits that we do, like, do you apologize for everything? Are you the person that if I'm in the elevator with you and I spill coffee on you, I apologize, and if you spill coffee on me, I also apologize? Do you have no boundaries? Is it very hard to say no? Can you not accept any compliments? These things are all giveaways for low self-esteem. Recognize whether you do these things, and day by day, think, did I just do it? Did I just apologize compulsively for no reason? I'm going to think about it, and maybe next time I'll be able to be silent instead of doing that. And literally, just like AA, you know, which is another good program, day by day, become self-aware about what you're doing to yourself and what you're saying.
That's why I think neuroplasticity, I do hypnosis using neuroplasticity, is that when you take those thoughts which stem from the mammal brain, as opposed to the frontal lobe, the rational cognitive brain, you could actually change this in a reasonably short period of time, which is something that...
Good. And that's true. And I've interviewed people who teach meditation, and they say that that is a great tool also for literally changing the shape of your thoughts. So, yeah, whatever you're doing on the conscious level, on any level, if you can also do, you know, the kind of work you're doing and or meditation and or anything that lets you get under the surface, that's going to speed your progress down the self-esteem path.
Right. Well, I would probably say anything that exposes the lies for what they are, and you learn to recognize the difference between a rational thought and an irrational thought.
Yeah.
You're a mother now. You're a parent, correct?
I am not.
Oh, you're not a parent.
No, but some of my best friends are.
Okay, well, spreading those rumors. If you had children, what would you do to prevent them from having low self-esteem?
Well, you know, the trouble is we're not all powerful and we can't prevent them, and it would be so hard for me to watch my kids. This is one reason I do not have them, because as a person with low self-esteem, especially when I was younger, you know, I was so fearful of everything. I mean, low self-esteem makes you feel, I use this word in the book, autophobia, I made this word up, fear of the self. You're so afraid of everything you're going to do next. I'm going to screw up, I'm going to look terrible, I'm going to make someone mad, that having kids is pretty much the hardest job in the world, and I knew I wasn't up to it. It was too scary to me. I would be scared to send them off to school every day and think, oh, gosh, they're going to be victimized by every mean teacher and every mean kid and everything. So what would I tell parents now? You know, give them at home, give your kids reality checks. The problem, I think, with modern civilization is that there's a lot of unmerited praise going on out there. People think it's a good thing to be giving everybody a trophy just for showing up and to be giving easy A's in all the classes. And, you know, on the surface, this does raise self-esteem, but it raises what psychologists call, it causes what psychologists call fragile self-esteem, which is based on...
I actually call it the imposter syndrome.
Exactly. And so kids get out into the harsh real world after being told they're a special snowflake, and then the real world doesn't treat them like a special snowflake, and they aren't made the vice president of the company after 1 week of being hired. And then they can become very depressed, very angry. So I say, parents, be real with your kids. You know, just as we should be real with ourselves and all of our loved ones. Okay, I'm a human being. I have flaws, and I have good points. What are my flaws, and what are my good points? Just give it to me. You know, I need to know.
I think I'm not
model beautiful. Maybe I'm not good at sports. Maybe I'm really not good at math. But maybe I have a good sense of humor. Maybe I am fun to watch movies with. Maybe I am very compassionate and great with animals. Just tell me. People with low self-esteem find it extremely hard to accept grandiose praise. You're beautiful, you know, and affirmations don't often work on us because it seems like a lie. It's too much. But if you tell us a tiny truth about ourselves, we can cherish that. and take that out into the world like a jewel, you know, and build on it. It's like, okay, I have a good sense of humor. I have a good sense. And every day, if we know what our real strong points are, this is true for kids and adults, we can connect with those strong points. And the more we connect with them and identify with them, the better we're going to feel about ourselves.
I would also say there's a difference between the person and the way in which they feel, meaning very often someone who is overweight feels really bad, and you're saying, listen, you're a great person. You have a choice to decide what your weight is going to be. So rather than tell them they're thin or they're perfect or don't worry about it, you know, number one, we talk about the relative obsession that this country has with weight, and that their weight should be whatever their body says it is. Eat healthy, eat normal. You know, if you want to lose weight, eat smaller portions, regular exercise. But what happens is people don't necessarily believe others more than their own head. So how do you get them out of that reel in their head that keeps on spewing the same old lies?
Yeah, we do. We do that. It's a cycle. You know, I always say, find someone you trust. Now, that's hard because low self-esteem, self-loathing is so isolating. It's hard to find anyone you trust. And I just hope and pray that every person out there with low self-esteem has at least one person they can trust who will tell them the truth about themselves. I know that's a lot to ask. You know, I'm lucky because I have a husband who is a very truthful, very wonderful human being, and he's helped me a lot over the years. I also have a therapist, but, you know, not everyone has those luxuries, and I just, is there a friend, is there a coworker, is there someone you can trust to give you a reality check? And then that reality check is your ticket to, as you say, taking responsibility and making choices and thinking, some things I cannot change in this world, but some things I can. Do I want to? And then that opens us up to the great experience of, who is the real me? Because low self-esteem puts us out of touch with our real selves. It makes us put a fake self out in the world and be so ashamed of our real self that we just cut it off. It's like, I hate that, I hate that, I hate that. We don't even remember who we once were and what we really want. And once we start asking the questions, it can be really interesting. What size do I want to be? What do I want to wear? What do I want to spend my time talking about?
The only thing I would add in terms of having a trusted friend is that to make sure that friend has objectivity. And when I tell people, if something is right, it feels right. If something goes against your grain, then you don't necessarily need to accept it, no matter who it comes from. Because we don't want anyone else defining our self-esteem, especially people, they project their own issues, even professionals. I want to ask you, though, something you wrote, and it confused me. You wrote, feeling your worst is not different from feeling your strongest. What did you mean by this?
I mean that feeling your worst, as I have done, it's a power, it's a force, it's a very strong feeling. So when you think of it as just energy, that feeling itself is a form of energy, of strength. Okay, maybe I could direct that force like a lightsaber, you know, to somewhere else. I look at self-esteem as occupying a spectrum, and that at one end, there's super, super sky-high self-esteem. At the other end, where I have been, there's super, super low self-esteem. Right in the middle is where I think would be a great place for us all to aim for, and that is sort of self-acceptance. And then we can look beyond ourselves, because at both extremes, there are forms of narcissism. There's forms of self-absorption.
But meaning
self-loving narcissist doesn't see other people, and the self-loathing person can't see other people either. But in the middle, we can look beyond ourselves, and then we can start using that energy that we were kind of, let's say, wasting on self-loathing and self-destruction, and take that energy and do something more creative with it.
Annalee, what about this? Meaning, I see having high self-esteem, meaning if something is true, then you're not arrogant or narcissistic. But when you have high self-esteem as opposed to narcissism, you actually are not competing with other people because you're really, the competition is all about yourself, but you're able to give to other people and really lift them up. When you're narcissistic, it's all about you. So would you agree with that?
Yeah, that's true. But I also think that extreme low self-esteem is a kind of narcissism too, because I've seen people so hating themselves that they wouldn't, let's say, go to events, and that's okay, I can't go, I'm going to make a fool of myself and everyone's going to hate me. Right. That's true. But in doing that, you're potentially hurting other people's feelings. What if the family really does want to see you, and maybe some of them you'll never get a chance to see again? What if someone worked really hard to put that event together and you're keeping yourself away from it because you think you don't deserve to go or that everyone's going to hate you, but, you know, other people are involved and you're hurting their feelings? What if, as was my case, you know, you have such low self-esteem that your loved one wants to say nice things to you and you just throw their praise back in their face? You know, you're beautiful. No, shut up. Why are you saying that? What do you want? You know, that's harmful to others. So, you know, there's another kind of narcissism at the bottom of the low self-esteem, at the bottom of the self-esteem spectrum.
Now, something you said, Annalee, that was fascinating. You said that low self-esteem or self-esteem is an American obsession. Why is it more American than it is anything else?
I just think that our history is a history of sort of individualism that's always been praised in our culture more than in many other cultures.
That's absolutely true.
Yeah, and you know, that was great in the days of the frontier when you had to go and build a cabin and fend off the wild animals on your own, with the nearest neighbor 5 miles away. So we've always had this kind of luxury of, you know, the self and what the self can achieve. And that is a great, great thing. That is a great thing. But on the other hand, it can turn kind of sick, because the more we think about ourselves, the more we potentially think bad things about ourselves, and, you know, or untrue things about ourselves. And then we become obsessed with ourselves. We're also an extremely celebrity-driven culture, so that we are deluged with images of and stories about the rich and famous. So we're, you know, constantly comparing ourselves to them. And that is another unique thing about our culture that makes us be constantly thinking about ourselves, being competitive. Competition is good, but at the same time, it can create this constant feeling of, I'm never gonna achieve what I want to achieve. I'm a failure.
Annalee, I got to tell you this. I treat lots of the rich and famous and lots of ordinary folk, and their self-esteem is no better. Okay, no better. Don Rickles, who was my favorite comedian growing up, he would throw up before every performance. Every performance, he had that much anxiety. So what happens is that there is no equation of dollar signs to self-esteem. Now, people with no money sometimes, or they're living a life that they can't afford to live, they have low self-esteem, even if they're making millions. The best thing is simply to be able to live a life that you could afford.
Well, yes, and to live a life that is real to you. It's true. I have quotes in Unworthy from various rich and famous people who say, shockingly to most of us, you know, that they have low self-esteem, that they think they're ugly. You know, people who are renowned as beautiful, people like singer Mariah Carey, people like Kate, you know, Winslet, the actress, you know, still have issues with their self-esteem, and that would be shocking to us regular folks at home. But it's true, you know, low self-esteem doesn't go away when you become famous. It really comes down to this private conversation with yourself. You know, who am I, and can I just tolerate being with myself? We are stuck with ourselves. We are the one human being that we are stuck with from the beginning until the end, 24 hours a day. And do you want to spend all of that time beating yourself on the head with a baseball bat? No, you do not.
What a waste of time. Honestly, what a waste of time. You know, the realization, you know, Einstein said we only use 6% of our brain. Our frontal lobe, our creative brain, could actually, which doesn't have low self-esteem, it basically says this is where we're starting from. How do we build from here to the next place? And if you're surrounded by people who put you down, people with low self-esteem tend to hang around them, I would tell them, get away from people who make your self-esteem worse.
Yeah, right? one of the booby traps that I talk about in Unworthy is loyalty. Because we, at probably early in life, we were told something bad about ourselves and we believed it, we became loyal to that idea and to the person saying these things to us. It's, in a way, it's also like being in a cult. I compare having low self-esteem to life in a cult, because we believed an authority figure who didn't have our best interests at heart. We believe this lie and we carry it around and we're proclaiming this lie throughout our lives. We're doing things that are not anything we would naturally normally do, but we're doing them out of loyalty to this lie we've been told. Our behavior is completely determined by this lie that we've been told and that we're now preaching.
You're absolutely right.
Get out of the cult. How can we deprogram ourselves? We can do some of the same things that actual cult members do, you know? Just how can we think about how we got into that cult? Imagine it like a story in our mind, you know, replay the movie. They actually do this in deprogramming sessions. How did I get incorporated into that cult? What was happening? Who said what? Watch it as you'd watch a movie. Feel compassion for yourself in that movie and think, okay, I am now going to one by one set aside all these things I learned in the cult.
Annalee, that's actually brilliant. They should actually buy a book on how they got out of the cult and realize that that low self-esteem is a cult.
Yeah, I recommend doing things like that or watching documentaries about people. As I did, it was very, very moving. Watching documentaries about people who had escaped cults, because I could relate to it. I could relate to it. And, you know, I've never been in a real cult, but, you know, the thing it does to your brain, believing a lie, believing it and clinging to it and carrying, and then this idea, wait, maybe I could be free. Oh, it's so scary. It's so scary to sneak out of my belief. It's scary to stop thinking that you are, you know, the ugliest, stupidest loser. It's actually scary to stop thinking that, to let yourself think, maybe I'm okay.
It's not so much scary. What it is it's difficult to believe.
Yeah.
You know, that becomes part of the problem. Let me ask you this. This was also kind of interesting. You mentioned we do because it's something we have. Now, are you saying that we do act as if we have self-esteem because we have low self-esteem?
I don't remember that part.
It's okay. I would say that's actually true, that if one has low self-esteem, they act as if they have low self-esteem.
Yeah.
Okay, and this becomes a reinforcing of that low self-esteem.
Yeah, and then all of our behaviors are springing from this belief, and then it affects the way we dress, the way we stand, the way we interact with people, this one core belief. This is why I suggest also in the book, you know, I suggest it kind of as a joke, but because I'm not a people person, I'm not an extrovert, but I think this could work, just like it works in AA. Support groups for people with low self-esteem. We could call it SLAG, you know, self-loathing all gone. And then we'd all get together in a room and everyone would tell their story of, you know, here's how I got my low self-esteem. Here's a low self-esteemy thing I did today. And everyone could say, oh, yeah, I've done that. You know what? Oh, that's crazy. You know, you look fine. And these would be support groups. And we would learn, A, that we're not alone, and that, B, we are doing these things that we do every day because of our self-esteem that we have. And, you know, how can we unlearn it?
Right. Meaning one of the things that I would tell people is that you could do things that show high self-esteem before you have it, because it does help reinforce the brain that if you could do it, then you could believe it. So,
like,
meaning
make it in AA. Well, until you make it.
Well, it's not even faking it. It's doing it. Meaning if you're acting out of a rational mind, your emotional brain will eventually become diminished because you're actually being able to manifest positive self-esteem and you're able to do something.
Yeah. I keep coming back to fear, because that has always been one of my main crippling issues. And I think it's pretty common with low self-esteem, because one of the things that low self-esteem makes us believe is that we're incompetent and that we can't handle stuff and we can't hack stuff. So that it is scary to do a thing that would indicate, oh, maybe my self-esteem isn't so terrible. I'm gonna wear the clothes that really, really suit me and really express my personality today. I'm gonna do that. That's, for some people, that alone is scary, just putting on the right outfit. I'm not saying a beautiful, famous, beautiful, gorgeous, expensive outfit. I'm saying the outfit that really reflects you. That can be scary to people. Even a little thing like that. Okay, I'm gonna go talk to that person in the office or at the party who's maybe a little intimidating but very interesting to meet. That's scary. That's scary to anyone, but it's really scary to someone with low self-esteem. Oh, God, they're going to laugh at me. No, I'll just go up there and say hi. That's scary. So a lot of what we're dealing with when we're trying to work on our self-esteem is conquering fear. That's day by day, little bit by little bit.
Well, you know, you mentioned believing a lie, and that's what you also, people with low self-esteem have to look at, is what they're believing. Is it a lie? Is it something that is simply not true? Because when a blind man tells you you're ugly and you react to it, what's the problem?
We're scared of, again, the fear. You know, we don't want to be bad and unacceptable and excluded. So we tend to believe criticism. I think, again, this might be in some of our DNA, but, you know, we tend to believe criticism more than we believe praise. And at an early age, when kids are vulnerable, they don't know, they don't have much experience in the real world to compare anything to. So if the mean coach on the soccer field says, you really blew it today, you know, that kid doesn't have much to defend him or herself with. And it's like, I blew it. You know, is it a lie? Did the kid really blow it? Is the coach all-knowing and all-powerful? Is it true? It kind of almost doesn't matter, because if you believe it, you believe it, you know.
Well, it doesn't matter, because if you believe it, you're going to manifest it and feel it. It doesn't mean that objectively it's true. It's that some of the greatest artists that we recognize never, ever were recognized when they painted the art.
Right, like Van Gogh. And people would, you know, back in 1938, whatever, told my mother, you know, you're fat, you're ugly. Yeah, maybe she was a few pounds overweight. She wasn't ugly, but she believed that as if it was true, and if it was a light, like it was a life sentence. That's who I am. I'm a fat, ugly person, and that makes me a bad person. So, yeah.
Which goes back, Annalie, to really, parents out there, words affect your child. Don't think that the difficult part of life is when you graduate school and you start to work. The difficult part of life is being a child when you can't defend yourself against all the lies and thoughts and beliefs that you're told. So, parents, if you want to destroy your child's life, put them down. If you want to really help them, be objective, be supportive, and try to help them find their own identity. Because, Annalie, wouldn't you agree that low self-esteem is also an identity disorder? Not really having a sense of what my purpose is on life.
Absolutely. And it's having it blocked. There's another word that I made up for this book, which is wantorexia. You know, we know what anorexia is. You know, I'm not hungry, I'm not eating, I don't want food. Yeah, I've had that too. But wantorexia is when we with low self-esteem believe that we don't want anything. Because either we were told, again, early in life, you know, you don't really want that. You're a boy, you don't want to play with dolls. You're a girl, you don't want to play with trucks. Or, you know, what you want is too expensive, and you're spoiled, and stop demanding that, and it's inappropriate, it's ridiculous, and it's gross, and it's scary. We came to believe, little by little, that we didn't deserve things, that we couldn't have things, and that we shouldn't have things. So it's easier, it's a form of self-protection to think, I don't want anything. We, with low self-esteem, then become really passive, really frozen. Yeah, we're easy to get along with because we let everyone else have their way, because we don't want to choose, because I'll choose wrong, I'll regret it, I'll make someone mad. I want nothing. So that is another, that's another aspect of what you're talking about.
Yeah, absolutely. People with low self-esteem make a choice and then they doubt that choice. Edison kind of, Edison said he knows 1,001 ways not to make a light bulb. You know, the frontal lobe works that any choice you make, if there's something, a flaw in it, it looks at that as a success. Every failure is a success because now you know what not to do when you go further.
Yeah, I like that frontal lobe.
Yeah, that's the front. That's the place where you need to live in.
Yeah, I know. It's amazing the things that people tell themselves. If we could make a soundtrack that we could hear of our inner voices and the things that most people say to each other, themselves all day, it'd be so sad. It would be so sad.
Why it would be very, very depressing. You know, that's why Americans do. The ones who have so much and they have so much free time, but they don't have a very clear identity, they tend to have it the worst. The ones who have no power, you know, the poor, the underemployed, they also have low self-esteem because they watch TV and, you know, and they see how other people live and they feel, what's wrong with me? Somehow, the person right in the middle seems to be doing a lot better.
Yeah, you know, as you say, it is so much about identity, and identity is a huge, huge thing in our culture. Who am I? Who am I? Who am I? But it becomes almost impossible to get the answer because this is such an extroverted culture where we are waiting for everyone to tell us who we are. We're waiting for the brands that make the clothing and the food and the music.
Correct.
And everything else.
Or the people.
We are.
You know, we're waiting. You know, most kids, they develop low self-esteem because they're not treated well by their peers. Let me ask you this question. Can you love someone truly with having low self-esteem?
As a person who has low self-esteem, can you love another?
Can that person truly love another person?
Yes, they can. I mean, I believe, though, if someone is super, 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 super sunk into self-loathing, maybe they can't. Maybe they can't. If someone is at the point of, let's say, suicide, which I have seen in others, no, they probably can't. They probably can't see beyond themselves. Most people with low self-esteem, yes, of course, they can love others. They don't understand why anyone would love them, but they can see enough outside themselves to appreciate, okay, that person over there is a wonderful, sweet, kind person that I admire and love. They can do that. I've done that myself as a person who had very low self-esteem. You know, I've loved others, you know, friends, my husband, my parents, people. But, you know, I have also seen people with such intense self-loathing that they could barely manage thin strands of love for others. It was one of the saddest things I've ever seen.
I want everyone to remember that it says, love thy neighbor as thyself. Self-compassion, self-love is not narcissism. Okay, narcissism is really when you just think you're better than everyone else and you put yourself above. But loving yourself, okay, and having compassion for yourself gives you the strength and the energy to go out there and help some other people.
Yeah, you need to get, as people always say, get over yourself. You know, just get enough okay with yourself to just turn away from the mirror and look at something else. A, yeah, you could do something in the world for others, and B, it's a lot more interesting. There's so many interesting topics in the world. I think the subtitle of the book that's on the cover is, what would you do today if you didn't despise yourself? And, you know, if just answer that question. There's so many things. If I hadn't spent my 20s starving myself and being obsessed with not eating, you know, maybe I would have learned another language or become really good at art or, you know, saved a bunch of animals from, I don't know, but, you know, it's too late for that. But at whatever point you are in life, you can say, okay, this energy that I'm spending on, you know, scowling at myself in the mirror or starving myself or telling myself I screwed up or wallowing in regret, what if I took this energy and, wow, what if I went and, like, volunteered at the hospital or studied some kind of subject that's always kind of interested me? Or what if I, you know, there's so many things we can do with our time and our brains.
Let's tease the audience a little bit. In your book, you have a chapter, 10 Hidden Self-Esteem Booby Traps. Name me a couple.
Wantorexia is one of them, thinking that we really have no desires. We do. They're in there. Find out what they are. Another one is fear. You know, what am I afraid of and why? Am I just afraid of myself? What can I do to get over that? Another one is regret. You know, living in regret, which is a common self-esteem thing, is basically like staring out the rear view window in a car and not being able to turn around and look at the front of the car. You're always like, look what I've done, look what I've done, look at that. Like, you can't see what's up ahead. It's so sad. In each case, I talk about how to dismantle these so-called booby traps. Either look at a famous example in literature or in spirituality or, you know, in real life, that someone has overcome this booby trap. Maybe somebody has been exactly where you are. And how did they, what did they use? I've got tools in there, you know, that have been tried. And, you know, this, okay, I'm going to do this myself because it's worth it.
You were at your book is amazing, and we're going to encourage everybody to read it. And I really, really appreciate your time. It's a topic that most people are walking with. And if you want to get out of that place, pick up a copy of the book. Annalee, thanks for being on my show. You are a real pleasure.
Thank you for having me.
Have a great day.
You too.
I want to once again thank our listeners for being with us today. And I want to thank Annalee for coming on to our show. Pick up a copy of her book, Unworthy, How to Stop Hating Yourself, on Amazon.com. And be sure to check out her site at AmazonRufus.com. I am Dr. Errol Gluck. Remember, to every problem there is a solution. Check out our other episodes. Have your friends do it as well. GluckRadio.com. And on our YouTube station by searching for Errol Gluck. Also, visit my website, GluckSolutions.org. to learn more about how clinical hypnosis based on neuroplasticity and executive life coaching will change your life. Thanks for listening. Till next time.